Welcome to Fairways to Fortune. We're here live at Pebble Beach, at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, and I'm with two professionals, so I'm blessed. I'm David Meltzer here with my co-host, the amazing PGA pro of the pros. I call him Virgil Herring. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on again. This is such a great opportunity, Fairways to Fortune. It's going to be a great show, and what a special guest we have today, Dave.
How blessed are we? Not only is he a Hall of Fame football player, not only is he a Hall of Fame entrepreneur, but he's a hell of a golfer. So I want to start there. Welcome, Marshall Faulk, our
Thanks
future PGA
me,
pro.
Thanks. senior tour.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Virgil, you got to play with Marshall yesterday. You know, what do you see when you get to a level of a Hall of Fame athlete? What do you see differently than, you know, a normal person that you're coaching or playing with?
Well, speed, right? I mean, even though you're a senior, you have a lot of speed. And I was really impressed with the technique and the technical prowess. We talked about it a little bit that he's had coaching, and he has really refined it. And what does it show me is, as a professional, he knows how to work, which ways to work best for him to refine the things that are essential to be a great player at whatever he's doing. And I was super impressed. I mean, we played in some miserable conditions yesterday.
It was not like this. We're on the 18th fairway here at Pebble Beach, by the way.
And it was a great time. But I mean, at the end of the day, we had to fight through the elements. But speed and the access to his learning style, and he understands what it takes to be great. And I guarantee you, he applies it to everything that he does. He has his own process, and that's the thing that separates elite from good.
And to that process, Marshall, you carried over from early in your career, enjoying the process. And so I imagine today you play more golf than you do football, although you coach at Southern. Congratulations for that. What are some of the mindset things that you carried forward from your Hall of Fame career in football into being such a great golfer?
I think the number one thing is understanding that you know, how you do one thing is how you do everything. And in golf, if you want anything out of golf, you got to put so much into it. For the amount of balls that you hit, the practice that you got to do, you might not see the result immediately. The reality is, you might not ever see the result. Like, I can go practice bunker shots for an hour and play golf and not hit a bunker for a whole week. but I got to be ready for when I do.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's golf. You know, you got to be prepared for the unexpected, and don't expect anything. Because any and everything could happen when you're standing over the ball.
Yeah, I think the thing that probably stuck out to me, we were playing with Nick, and he set up, he was going to hit driver. And you're like, you have to set up over the shot knowing that any outcome is possible. And the harder you practice and the better you get, the more you start thinking that those things aren't possible. But when they do show up, it rattles the core of who you are. And usually that ruins a day for somebody, even the best players in the world, when they're working on something and they feel like they got it, and all of a sudden it slips through their fingers for just a little bit because they stop thinking that anything's possible, it gets them. And that was a good reminder to me, is like, this game is unbelievably difficult and a lot of options are available over every shot.
You know, one of the things that I find, the complexities of golf and why golfers struggle with when things go bad, is because it's a game of opposites. You know, every other sport, when you play it, the fix is the actual fix. In golf, because it's a game of opposites, your brain works to correct the right way compared to the opposite way, which is, in theory, if you're hitting the ball left, you would think, okay, I'm hitting it left. I need to aim further right. But the further right you aim, the further left it goes.
Right. Yeah,
so when you're hitting it left, you actually got to aim left if you want to straighten it out. And your brain don't know how to fix that. Like, hey, I want the ball to go up. I got to hit down on it. What? Like, and because of that, our brain, we know how to correct. Like, if something's coming to us from the right, we move left. Your natural instinct, and then that's what gets you in trouble in golf. And the players who can, like, step outside of their natural box and correct with autopilot. That's why we practice so much. It's autopilot. Like, literally, the movie Tin Cup is so great because how does he keep getting over and hitting the same shot? Could you? We're conditioned to do that.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, I don't care what happens. You set up, make the same, set up. You don't think something different is going to happen. And you have to be that way in golf.
Yeah.
Like, the result, it doesn't matter. It's the process. And when you do it, the procedure you go through, that's why the whole pre-shot routine matters. So when you get in the moment and it's to win the tournament, you're on autopilot.
Yeah. And so, Virgil, you coach so many executives as well, including me, and changed my golf game. But you tell an interesting story about the difference between Marshall Faulk walking into a huddle when it's fourth and one on the goal line compared to you just hit two perfect shots and you're sitting in front of the green in two on a par five.
Mm-hmm.
And what a golfer thinks walking up to the ball compared to Marshall Faulk walking into the huddle. Give us that difference of the mindset of a football player compared to a golfer.
Well, I would think, speaking for you, sir, is that I would imagine nothing, when you come out of the hill, you're thinking nothing is stopping you from getting in the end zone, right? Nothing's going to stop you. Where most people, they hit driver and hit through and right up to the front of the green, and most of their mindset is, don't mess this up.
Yep. Don't chunk it, right?
Don't chunk
like,
it.
When you said that to me, I'm like, every single time I do that, which isn't as often, but my immediate thought pattern is, man, I hope I don't chunk this. And instead of, you know, playing football, you never go, I hope I don't fumble.
Yeah, I mean, you never thought, I'm like, I better hold on. I hope I don't fumble. Like, that never crosses your mind. But golf, it's a weird thing. I call it job security, but nevertheless, it's a funny game.
Job security. Yeah, do you see that mindset? Did you have to ever struggle with that coming up to a ball?
Nah, because it in golf, like, I look at golf totally different. Like, I approach the game, like, every shot is a game.
Right. Yeah.
I can't lose the game because I'm always in the game. Like, the ball's not going away. If I keep the ball in play, the ball's not going away. And so I don't, for me, it's just execution. Like, I got to execute a technique to hit this ball. If I'm in front of the green, I'm trying to get it up and down for two. Now, what I do is I'm just trying to make it. I'm not even trying to get it up and down. Like, if I try to make it, then I'm going to get it close.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so I make my miss a plus.
Yeah.
So then I'm playing a rigged game.
And how does this carry over? You know, you're a great entrepreneur as well, and we're blessed to work together in the business world, especially with finance. How do you see the same type of mindset and process in the business world? Because you're so, I'd say, devotional, which is not just discipline, you're intentional with discipline daily, consistently, persistently. How does that carry over into business?
Yeah, it like easy. Like the no is not right now. It's not really no.
Right.
Not right now. They don't know. They don't understand. And you continue to be persistent about what you want. And and you have to drive the car. You know, the car, don't get in the back seat, get in the front seat and drive the car. I don't care if it's a Rolls Royce, you want to drive the car. That's it.
Like, I had a client like that. He had his driver follow him in a town car. He had a ghost Rolls Royce, phantom doors, everything. And I'm like, what are you driving? He goes, I'm not letting him drive this.
That's
it. The driver's behind me.
I want to drive the car. That's it. And when you drive the car, you're in control of the car and the outcome, whether you have an accident or you go left or right, you know what I'm saying? You may follow a GPS, but you're driving the car.
That's awesome.
Now that you've stepped into the coaching world, I remember yesterday you said you never thought that you were going to coach.
Right.
And one of the greatest gifts is to encourage young people to a place that they didn't know that they could achieve. And now that you're in the mix at Southern and you're getting the taste of what it feels like to encourage people, and because of your already Hall of Fame career, people are going to want to listen most of the time. How has that impacted your life already, even before things are really getting going?
Oh, it's helped me have perspective. I have this, I'll just call it, if I had to label, like a Hall of Fame mindset. And everybody doesn't have that mindset. And the best advice that I got going in, I was talking to Tony Dungy last year at the Hall of Fame before I got ready to go to Colorado. And I said, Coach, just if there's one thing I need to know, What would it be? And he said, Marshall, just remember to coach the kids at their talent level that they're at their capabilities, not yours. And and understanding that, I'm like, okay. And so every time I'm sitting down with the player or if I'm watching him do something, I never critique it from my perspective. I critique it from their perspective. And
that's awesome.
One of the things I think it's like, I hate when guys get on TV, they're calling a game or talking about a game, and they say, I can't believe he did that. I'm like, what do you mean? you can't speak from that point of view. Like, I understand why everything happens in the game because you have an opponent. You have yourself and you have the other person. So coaching these kids and making sure that I coach them at the level in their capabilities is the most important thing. Like, whatever speed he is, how do I coach him with that speed? Whatever deficiency he has, how do I coach him with his deficiency and to help get him better?
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, Michael Jordan said he never wanted to coach, but Larry Bird did. And Bird said that was a big deal to him, is learning how to stop remembering what I could do.
Yep.
And try to help everybody on the team do what they can do.
Yeah.
And I took a lot from Bird's comments on what it took to be a coach.
It's hard. It's hard because the natural instinct in me is to refer to my default setting.
Yeah.
And I have to remember, like, this kid is 18.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying his hardest.
It's even worse in business because the intangibles are much more valuable because there's a basement that's of skills and knowledge and desire that's needed to be a professional. You know, when I work with Rick Macy, Serena and Venus as tennis coaches, mm-hmm. like, I start with DNA, right? Mm-hmm. I work with people, but they're not going to be that level unless they have the right genetics. That doesn't really exist in the business world.
Mm-hmm.
It's intangible, it's subjective, and yet, you know, with especially the younger people, like you said, you have to meet them where they're at, and they are different today as well.
Oh, yes.
And NIL exacerbates the situation in football. But then again, this facade of social virtual existence and remote working, to me, is similar or analogous to NIL because it's easy money for a lot of people, but it's not enough that it's mainstream. So everyone thinks they deserve it. Do you fall into that trap both in business and, of course, in coaching, where you get kids that just expect
100%
entitled? And I know that's a generational thing. How are you combating that to try to transition someone that may be a little bit entitled to shift their paradigm and perspective that everybody earns what they get?
So part of, you know, my conversation with the kid and the parent, I make sure that they understand that they're walking into a competitive atmosphere.
Mm.
And everything here is about competition. If you want to play, you have to compete. We're not sitting down having a conversation about you being my starting without you coming on this field and competing. And when you teach them how to compete and you show them what competition is, then the rite of passage becomes what you earn. The playing time is earned. You getting the football is earned through all the repetition, all the reps, and you showing up, and people feel like, hey, this guy deserves to have the ball thrown to him at this point in time. Third and five, fourth and five, who are we going to? We going to the guy who showed up the most, who worked the hardest, who did the most, who earned the right. If you just go to the guy who has 5 stars because he has 5 stars, you got a problem. You're going to have somebody else saying, throw me the ball.
Yep, right.
If you don't create a competitive environment. And that's what we do. Now, I'm going to try to change this. Like, I think, when we say NIL, we're trying to soften the blow because we don't want to say that these amateurs are getting paid. Let's just call it money.
Right.
Because NIL sounds good, but in college, it sounds funny to just say, hey, the money has made the game what it is. And that's what money does.
Yeah.
Money is not evil, but people can be.
Mm-hmm.
Money is not lazy, but people can be. And these kids right now, they're getting a lot of money. They're getting a lot of money to go out. If you don't make them understand how to be competitive, then you have to give them stuff.
Yeah. You know, two things I want to pick up on that is, like, do you feel like it's helping the NFL with NIL because it's keeping people in college football longer so they develop more, especially in the quarterback position where so many quarterbacks, as soon as they have that great year in college, they get out. And now you're starting to see them stick around because maybe they'll make more money. Heck, there was like 11 guys made more money than Brock Purdy last year. at quarterback in college, so they're staying. Do you feel like that's a benefit, or do you feel like $5 million for a quarterback in college is a little much?
You know, wherever there's a benefit, then somewhere else it suffers. Right now, the freshman player, the 18-year-old out of high school has no place in sports. Because if you have a 25, 26-year-old senior on his sixth year at a school and you got an 18-year-old, I don't want my kid playing with you. That's a grown-ass man.
Yeah.
It's exactly why the NFL made you stay 3 years. So you didn't have an 18, 19-year-old playing with possibly a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
Because football is a little different. It's not like basketball.
Yeah.
Cooper Flag, that's a foul. That's a foul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in football, they don't call fouls for that.
Yep.
So you got to make sure that the guy, that the players are at a level playing field. And I know at 25, 26, I was at my fifth year in the league. I was a much more smarter, stronger, like I had a better understanding compared to when I was 18.
Yeah.
That part has to be fixed. Maybe the freshmen, they have to come to the FCS. They can't go to FBS unless they prove something. But where it's good on the money side, yes, they get to develop. But shit, do you want a 26-year-old, 25-year-old playing with your 18-year-old kid who just got out of high school?
Yeah, that's no good.
Like that don't even sound. In basketball, there's a guy that was 29. He played in the EuroLeague. Then he played in the EuroLeague, went to the G League, and then now he's going back to college. They're like, no, you're 27, 28.
Yeah.
Hell with that.
That's exactly right. And then adaptability. One of the things that I find fascinating, and you already talked about it, is that you have a game plan to access your strengths, and your opponent knows what you're good at, and then they're trying to take that away.
Mm-hmm.
How important is adaptability within the game? That especially in your playing career, when everybody knew they were going to have to try to deal with you both running the ball and catching the ball out of the backfield at such a high level, how did you work on adaptability off of certain plays?
Well, understanding that, and this sticks with me. I remember my coach, you beat a man by attacking his weakness. You break a man by attacking his strength.
Oh, man. Love that.
So in a sense, what we're always trying to do is we're always trying to strengthen our weaknesses, but you also got to sharpen your strengths.
Mm-hmm.
and work on both, because if you only focus on your deficiencies, then your strengths get weaker. And in the interim, we gotta use everything. We gotta make sure that we're working on. You can't just ask. And this is one of the things as I bring young players in, I'm like, hey, here's what you're really good at. Here's what you're bad at. We're going to work on both.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just work on one. And I think when you understand that, then you make your weaknesses just by acknowledging that it is what it is and you continue to work on it. It starts to become a strong suit.
Yeah.
In your game.
Gold. That was gold, folks.
He's gold. One of the things that I admire most about you and appreciate as a friend of you, and Virgil, you're the same way, is there's a lot of people, especially with social media, that put things on for show. So they'll say, you know, I'm all about giving back to the kids, and they may be a part-time coach on the flag football team for their son, and then always posting, and everybody in the community is like, oh my God, so-and-so is such a great guy. He coaches his son's flag football team because he wants to give back what he learned to his community and the kids. And then there's other guys like you that not just in walking the walk in football and saying, look, I want to give back what I learned from my coach to change these kids' lives. You move. It's an extraordinary amount of time. You don't need the money. You're not doing it for the money. And you walk the walk. And you do the same thing, just being here in Pebble Beach to pour into our community. You left the Super Bowl, which is, I define Super Bowl for guys like Marshall and I, it's tax season plus a family reunion all at once. And it's a big family reunion when you're a Hall of Famer.
Absolutely.
I've been in the game a long time as a business guy. It's big enough for me, but I could imagine everybody. Like, I left a party early because I couldn't take how many people want to ask you for whatever it is, but you're always able to manage expectations. But I think more importantly, you walk the walk. You don't say thing, and then I see you do something different in person than the things that you're saying or the things that I see about you. How important is that to you in your career, so, to be able to be known as that guy that shows up the way that he promises to show up?
I don't know. I don't know, like, on the exterior what it looks like, and I'm listening to you.
Yeah.
But for me, internally, I'm aligned with myself. And my actions and my words, they mirror each other. I'm moving in the way that I'm talking, so I never have to pretend. What I put on social media, that's me. That's me. The stuff that I'm saying, that's me. The things that if I'm talking about it, I'm dealing with it, struggling with it, trying to get better. And that's it. And when you're aligned, then you don't need lines. You just exist.
Yeah. More gold.
Yeah. The standard.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the most important thing to me, is that you create a standard and then you live by it. And it becomes your decree or your code.
Yeah.
And an absolute perfect example is how Marshall conducts himself. In the little bit of time that I've had to sure. spend with him, it's obvious that he brings it with his standard. And that's probably one of the greatest compliments you could get as a person, is the fact that your standard is at a way that it impacts people's lives just by being. And that's a great way to be, man.
So I think it helps too, just as a friend, to live up to the standards of your friends, not live down to them.
Mm.
And Marshall knew me when I was living down to the standards, where now today, you know, first one, I still, when it goes to the tap room, I go to the nap room, because it's important to me to live to my standards, because I've learned it from the greats. Virgil, I was curious for you, when you're around great athletes and great entrepreneurs and you help them all, you are this close to being the guy behind me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You have the skills, obviously, and I know you're very honest with yourself. What do you think the difference was in your career compared to the guys that are out here playing today? Because you obviously can hit the ball well enough, mm-hmm. put the ball well enough, but there's something that I'm sure you've learned. You're a much better coach. You're one of the world's best coaches, mm-hmm. but you weren't one of the world's best players.
I think it started in the mind, right? Like, there's one thing to be able to do it when you're practicing. Then there's one thing to be able to do it when you're playing. And then there's a whole other feeling when it's in the event itself, right? And I never had the doubts when I was playing with my friends. I never had the doubts when I was practicing. But when it's that moment of truth, when you got to hit the shot, for some reason, my mind defaulted to don't mess this up. Instead of, here's your moment, execute. And but nobody was there to coach me, to help me understand what was going on. Because when I was going on, I was giving every single thing that I had. I just didn't know that energy that I was putting in was not very productive. Nervous.
Did that create your calling to be?
That is exactly what it created, because I got bad information.
Yeah.
And then I swore that I would never let another kid down on my side of the street, because I was going to make sure that I gave them the information of what it took. Now, it doesn't mean that they will get it.
Yeah.
There might be people that get it mentally, but they don't have the physical gifts to play on the tour. They didn't hit it far enough or whatever.
Yeah.
But to have that skill works for the rest of your life and every single thing that you do. And to be able to cope with the moment is, in my opinion, what separates elite from good. I was good, but elite handles it and maybe even elevates themselves when the lights are on. And that's the thing.
Like an MVP.
Like, yeah, right.
Marshall, real quick, as we finish up, your calling, you know, is there an experience playing college pro that you felt like, wow, this is my calling, and someday I'm going to be the coach at Colorado, at Southern, at San Diego State someday, who knows?
I mean, many a times, in the sense of a variety of things that I've done, there's always those moments like Virgil was talking about. And what I've realized is I have the ability to control the moment and not allow the moment to control me.
Mm.
Understanding how to deal with your nerves, your inner being, being able to quiet the inner noise, you know, like that inner noise in your head that says, don't fuck it up. Like that person right there, he all lives inside of us. And you control that person with the other person, which is go be great. Go be great. And you have to give yourself permission to be great.
Yeah,
you got to give yourself permission. Like, it's okay to be at the top, because it's lonely at the top. And when you're up there, you want other people to be up there with you.
Yeah.
And when you're playing a golf, when you're playing a sport like golf, which is singular, in football, it takes 11 people to be successful.
Yeah.
But in golf, you're by yourself. And as much as you want to win, you don't want to stick out.
Yeah.
you want to be, but in these moments, you got to tell yourself, no. I want to be the outlier. I want to be great. And in order to be great, you got to deal with moments like this. This is it.
I love it. My college football coach, as a below average college football player, always used to say, don't be afraid to be great. Just keep playing. Keep playing. Don't be afraid to be great. And as you get older, some of these little one-liners that your coaches tell you can impact your entire life. And being that below average college football player is probably the most beneficial experience to all the successes that I've had off the field, both as a coach and as an entrepreneur who executes on it every single day. Helping me is one of my great partners and friends, the incredible Hall of Famer Marshall Faulk, with my co-host and incredible friend as well, Virgil Herring. Thank you guys so much for joining us on Fairways to Fortune, live here at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am on the 18th fairway.